Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to episode number 134 of
From Everybody
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Awesome. So we are in Bushwick, Brooklyn, just off the Jefferson L train stop at the new home of KCBC, the Kings County Brewers Collective. So those of you who have listened to our show before might recall a year ago on episode 87, we hosted Tony Bellis, Zach Kinney, and Pete Lengwell of Kings County Brewers Collective.
This is our episode of Beer Are They Now?
All right, so we're going to be following these guys as they journey. So when did you guys sign your lease?
So September 1st. As of September 1st, we have been, we've had an official home here in Bushwick at 381 Troutman Street.
Awesome. And let's talk about what happened between last September now.
Well, let's see. Between last September and now, I think we probably looked at 100 pieces of real estate and Brooklyn
City.
And let's just say New York City in general. And so, yeah, we've been hanging out looking for real estate and trying to find a new home for KCBC, which we have found.
Yeah, I mean, fundraising was obviously a big part of it too. You know, we had to raise a big portion of, you know, private equity, our own cash, a big bank loan, and all these pieces also kind of had to converge as well over the past several months/year, you know. As luckily, it's all come together. We're feeling really good about where we are now. So
you guys have the architect plans downstairs, right?
Yes, so we do. We've got some permits that we'll be filing very soon for initial round of construction. We've got, you know, some brewery equipment coming in the next month and a half or so. So we've got to get our floors and plumbing ready to go.
So when did you order your brewing equipment? What kind of process was that? How'd you decide on the size and who's making it? All that stuff. Talk about that.
I don't remember when we ordered it, Tony.
I think we ordered brewing equipment in July. I mean, we kind of went through a whole process of looking at...
We looked at like 10 different vendors.
Yeah, you know, just, you know, talking to other breweries and other people who've bought equipment. Who did they like? Why did they like it? And, you know, I think really our ultimate decision came down to finding somebody that we really clicked with and kind of had a good business relationship with.
Yeah,
customer service. We had all kinds of things we wanted to see in the brew house, you know, options. We went and flew out to Chicago and looked at some breweries and met with some manufacturers. And we ended up with ABE, and they make quality stuff, and the customer service is like second to none.
Yeah, they were really willing to you know, tailor the system to fit with, you know, both my partners here have a lot of brewing experience, and they know what we need to, in order to really get beer in and out of the system, you know, in terms of being able to underlet, being able to get, you know, water here or there whenever you need it, you know, all these little kind of, you know, things that you realize if you've brewed for years that, you know, they were able to accommodate. And obviously, you know, again, they've got a team of engineers that got a couple decades of experience, and, you know, they were price friendly. And
so nice shout out to ABE, American Brewing.
American Brewing.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good dudes.
That brings up another issue. So you guys have not been sitting back and only looking at real estate for the last year. So Tony and Pete, you guys have been brewing professionally, and Zach, you've still been brewing a ton at home.
Yeah, totally.
So you guys are all brewing. So let's talk, Tony, you've been the head brewer at Greenpoint Beer Works.
Greenpoint Beer Works over in Clinton Hill. We brew Kelso, Heartland, lots of other people's beers. So
they even hired Guzman.
And I love it. I will say also, Tony, it's really great to have you over there. You're an incredible mentor and a worthy constituent.
Really, hey, Kuzma, I'll give you $20 after. I'll
take it in free KCBC.
So you're bringing out a 30-barrel system?
We have a 30-barrel brew house. We have 22 fermenters.
Crazy!
4 bright tanks. So yeah, we pound out beer there like almost nobody else in New York City. Nobody else in New York City is making beer like us, except for Brooklyn Brewery. So
second largest brewery.
Second largest brewery in New York City.
You've learned a couple things.
Yeah, I've learned a few things. So yeah, it's been nice. Kelly Taylor has been awesome. We run a good ship over there, a lot of mentorship, a lot of learning. So awesome professional experience and personal, you know. Met a lot of cool people over the years that have gone on to open other breweries and do other, you know, great things. So it's, great.
It's kind of this farm system for New York City breweries. It's become this, you know, talking about Rich at Single Cut, you know, Sam at other half, obviously, you know, us, you know, Pete was there for a little while too in the early days. It really has nurtured the new generation of New York City craft beer, I think.
That's true. Yeah. So Pete, what have you been doing for the last year?
I started at Greenpoint Beer Works. And then went to Brooklyn Brewery for a bit, and then helped our friends at Finback, and at Finback part-time, and Rockaway Brewing. Just jumping around, getting as much experience as I can.
Yeah, so you basically have now had experience on 4 different brewing systems.
Yeah.
Which gives you a lot of not only breadth, but depth of experience as far as just all the kind of kinks and ins and outs of different brewing systems.
Every system's a little different, and everyone that works them has their own little tips and tricks, so it's good to see what everyone else is doing and learn something here and there.
Awesome. What do you think has been your biggest learnings, like, from working at these 4 breweries?
Brooklyn Brewery's got a pretty, like, large-scale system. They got a centrifuge, a giant DE filter, and, you know, I think Brooklyn was probably one of the best.
Just as far as, like, kind of
as far as exposure to, you know, different things.
Yeah.
Greenpoint Beer Works, like, Tony's there now. Scrappy little joint. Lots of, you know, beer flowing through that place. Very hands-on. Good crew. Everyone's tight. Work really hard. That's a great place to launch from.
And then Rockaway is a smaller system, right?
Yeah. And they're making some awesome beer.
Yep.
And just killing it there, too, so.
Cool.
Yeah, Pete's kind of like he's like the beer whisperer, like, sort of goes from one brewery to the other brewery, and like, it's kind of like, I think, sponge, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, so I obviously am only a home brewer, right? Chris is now working also at Greenpoint. So I think it's been super interesting for me to see the difference between, I mean, there's a lot of difference between home brewing and pro brewing, using a centrifuge and a DE and, you know, everything that goes into a big brewery.
Our quantity of yeast you're dealing with, how to keep that healthy, how to, like, just get beer in and beer out on that scale.
It's absolutely
totally different.
Our pillow talk has changed significantly.
Whoa!
Yes, never did I think DE filters would be. So kind of, let's talk about what are your next steps for like the next, you know, 2 or 3 months.
Kind of next 2 or 3 months is where our architect team is wrapping up drawings for this space and filing for construction permits. So I think in the next 30 days, we should be breaking ground in this space, which is going to include ripping out some old stuff and starting with some new stuff. So I think, you know, by the beginning of November, we should be tearing up some concrete and putting in boilers and piping and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, over the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, building this space out and making beer sometime this spring.
That'll be awful. Yeah. The other big piece is obviously the permitting and all the paperwork. We've been living in piles and piles of paperwork, you know. Sales tax exempt form, you know, property tax forms, you know, our lease agreement, and obviously the big ones, TTV and SLA. So, you know, in terms of your federal and state, you know, brewery licensing requirements, and they have been for us, it's been challenging. You know, we have a slightly more complex structure and a bigger budget to deal with in terms of investors and a bank loan or our own funds, and to be able to, like, show that in the right format for the federal and state governments has been a lot of head scratching and phone calls, and luckily the New York City craft brewery scene and honestly even attorneys who have experience in this have been really helpful and given us a lot of insight, and hopefully that will go relatively smoothly, and in 3 or 4 months here we'll have those documents.
So I have a question about how did you guys choose your architect or architecture firm? Because that is something, especially in New York City, totally. We have a lot of regulations, right? You have to be in a certain zoning to begin with, and then, you know, you have to have an AAD restroom. There's a lot of things that maybe people wouldn't think about opening a brewery normally. So
I think it was talking with other people who have gone through a similar thing. So it was talking with other breweries, like with bars and restaurants. We actually found a team that's really great that's, you know, worked with some other breweries and have a lot of experience in restaurants, bars.
Yeah, John Bedard, Kushner Studios, they've been fantastic, and they're really taking good care of us. And, you know, they worked on Threes. They're also working with other upcoming breweries, and they've been really, really smart about how to be efficient and to, you know which hoops you have to jump through and how to do that and which ones you need to not worry about, because it's ultimately about, you know, the state of New York has been really, you know, pro beer for the, you know, the recent kind of years, and that's been, you know, ultimately gonna help us out too.
Yeah.
So we've talked about, I mean, there's so much that goes into opening a brewery, no matter where you are in the country. What about the beer? So you guys are serving five or six of the recipes that are in development?
Yep.
So let's talk about what you guys have been doing as far as developing your recipes over the last year while looking for a space and an architect and all this other stuff.
Yeah, we've had so much spare time. Honestly, it's been so free. It's so funny, you know, you hear this from other breweries, and I think we're experiencing it as well. You know, ultimately, making the beer is never the hardest part. For us as brewers, all three of us, it is the most fun. So, you know, for what it's worth, we've been playing around with some new hop varieties. We have an experimental pine fruit IPA that I think has gone over extremely well.
Yeah.
That is something that we'd like to, like, buy up all the pine fruit. If you have pine fruit IPA, pine fruit hops.
It's terrible hop.
Terrible hop. No, don't buy it. Sell it to us. We'll buy it all because it's awesome. We've got, plans for a lemongrass saison, which has come together really well, you know, doing some different yeast strains on that, really liking the French saison strain with that.
Dialing a really cool Pilsner recipe, on top of all the other stuff, like, you know, the zillion IPAs the three of us have brewed,
I'm drinking a Brett Rye Sour right now that I think is something I really want to keep in the mix, you know, 100% Brett fermentation, you know, kettle sour with a rye ale, and then all Brett in primary, and, you know, turns it around pretty quickly and gives it that kind of tart complexity.
And we're planning on having 10 or 12 tap lines in our tap room. So, you know, the name of the game here is brewing lots of different stuff all the time, you know, so we'll have, you know, lots of stuff that we're getting out to bars and restaurants, and then hopefully lots of stuff that we're just keeping on site here in our tap room, you know. So
we're gonna be bringing in home brewers, gypsy brewers, anyone who wants to come in and brew with us as well, and try and again just be a home and a space, you know, with 5,000 square feet with nice, you know, decent high ceilings. We're hopeful that we can be a, you know, kind of a destination for brewers as well as for drinkers.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are a great location. I mean, a block from
the subway.
Less than a block from
Jefferson
the train.
You mentioned that. You can find us easily. 381 Troutman Street.
Don't drive to KCBC. Get on the subway.
Get on the subway.
Yeah, exactly.
That's you can drive.
Because you're not going to be able to drive home afterwards.
Well, it's awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and I can't wait to catch up again with all this stuff. You guys are making amazing stuff with a breadth of experience, and the liquid is fantastic. The people are fantastic. The vibes are great, and the place is great.
Yeah. And, we're excited about following you along the way, so we will check back with you guys in a couple of months.
All right. Beer for are the next, they now?
Exactly. Beer are they now.
Fermentabout.
Fermentabout.
1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
And we're back. Welcome back to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thanks to the boys of KCBC. We love you and wish you all the best support. We will frequent your place often.
And we're looking forward to following you along the way. All right, so let's move to GABF.
Speaking of following you, I followed you all around Denver because you were on a freaking crazy mission. What did you do in Denver?
Well, you were along for all of it, although I did go about it
last week.
So we had a great, absolutely fantastic time at the Great American Beer Festival this year. So we're going to just, let's just talk about everything that we did, because almost all of it was incredible and just amazing seeing not only the craft brewing scene across America, but also in Denver alone. So Wednesday, we started off with a fantastic breakfast at Sam's. So whenever you're in Denver, if you're downtown, Sam's is a great place to fill up before venturing onto your pub crawl.
I believe Jim Gesselbach of Loafer Chemicals called it burritos the size of cats.
Yes, the burrito the size of a cat. Yeah. And then we headed up to Falling Rock, actually, where we met former Beer Drinkers of the Year, Cornelia Corey, Ray McCoy, and then our friend Gary Steinel, who's we know through the Captain Lawrence Brewing Company here in New York City, or New York. So that was pretty cool, just hanging out with some really good beer people and... It's always fun to meet. That's part of the fun, right? Meeting new people. From there, we were headed to the Beers Made by Walking Festival, which was at our mutual friend Brewing Company. So we decided to walk there from downtown, and we did kind of an amble. It turns out there's several breweries along the way. So we stopped into River North and Zephyr. Both were great. We had very different breweries, different beer lineups, but we had several... We had a full flight from Zephyr.
Yeah.
And then almost a full flight from River North as well. So at least we tasted it. We didn't finish everything since we were trying to save ourselves. But both of those breweries I would highly recommend. All right, so then we headed up to our mutual friend and actually went to their backspace or side space for the Beers Made by Walking Festival.
Which we spoke to leading up to Denver about how excited we were about this, and for good reason.
Yeah, and that was absolutely, again, one of the... best things that we did while we were in Denver. It was even better this year because it was outdoors. It was absolutely fantastic weather while we were there. And they had plenty of space, so it didn't feel too crowded. There were really no lines. They had a pizza truck.
About the beers? What inspired you about the beers?
Everything. So this was all based around... breweries that had either taken hikes that were either led by a forager or led by somebody else and then designed a beer either inspired by those hikes or something they came across on those hikes or something that they actually forage or collect on those hikes. So it was amazing. Not only were there Colorado breweries, but there were breweries from North Carolina and other parts of the country. Our friends from Scratch Brewing and Ava were there. So I want to mention, I think we had some amazing beers there. We are looking forward to having the folks from Black Project. That's a Denver brewing company, and also Scratch, which we've been meaning to have on for a year, and we're finally going to do it, in Ava, Illinois, and then Flora Fauna. And Flora Fauna is in North Carolina. They actually took a medal at GABF, so we're looking forward to having them on.
So Flora Fauna and Black Project, they had what, spontaneously fermented beers.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And that they were both doing very fun stuff and really leveraging the enemy, if as you would.
to make some very delicious things.
The frenemy.
The frenemy.
The frenemy.
The frenemy.
The wild bacteria and yeast frenemy, yes.
Yes.
Okay, and then afterward we headed to the Marty Jones Cabaret, where we saw, we were entertained by music and drinks, and we saw Charlie Papazian and the Brewers Association economist Bart Watson speak. So that was fun and informative as well. And if you're interested in the economics of craft brewing, you should follow Bart Watson on Twitter.
But notably, that's where I first heard, it wasn't on my radar necessarily, that we just crossed the 4,000 threshold mark of how many breweries there are in America. And at the rate of growing at the rate of 1.9 per day on average, that accounts for closures in America, which aren't that many. That accounts for that, and we should be crossing the 4,200 mark by the end of the year, which means that we will then have more breweries in the United States than we ever have before, beating the number, the current record of 1885, I think, or 1887, yeah,
definitely
something like that, pre-prohibition.
So Thursday morning, we headed out to Spang-a-Lang. We stopped for a bagel at Rosenberg's Bagels. Excellent New York's, or excellent bagels, period. Very, definitely on par with what we get here in New York City. So that's right around the corner from Spang-a-Lang. Obviously, you guys heard the interview last week with the guys from Spang-a-Lang. That was just super fun. I thought the breadth and depth of what they're doing there is amazing. The Cucumber Gosa was incredible. We had a really nice sour. Their Amber Lager was great. They're just, that was really, honestly, one of my, we hit several breweries in Denver, but that's one of my favorites.
And they're really young, not them age-wise, but I mean them as a brewery. They're 5 months old.
Yeah.
And I particularly love the name. Spang-a-Lang refers to a jazz kind of term. Like when you, in jazz, you know, the you hit the ride cymbal, same symbol as ding, 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 dang, spang-a-lang, 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 spang-a-lang. So that's where that comes from. They are in a place where actually all the musicians would come through Denver and they would have jam sessions in there, in actually the location that Spang-a-Lang is located in. It's pretty fun, pretty cool, to me, at least. Y'all don't have to like jazz, but I love it.
No, I agree, absolutely. And then, actually, we met up with an old friend of mine from college there, Mandy, and she accompanied us to Marco's Pizza, and that's an authentic Neapolitan-style pizza in Denver. So another really great place to eat while you're there in Denver. That's right by Star Bar, which we didn't actually hit Star Bar this time, but they always have a great craft beer lineup and fun scene. That's kind of a twofer when you're in Denver. So after that, we stopped by this media thing for Harpoon Brewery and Deschutes Brewing Company got together and did a collaboration beer called E-Hop, and it's an IPA. So we actually tasted the one that they brewed at Harpoon. So for those of you who don't know, Harpoon and Deschutes are both employee-owned companies. So they had a little event with several other employee-owned companies, including New Belgium.
Yep.
Anyway, the E-Hop IPA I thought was really nice. It is a spiced beer with sage and thyme, and I thought it was delicious. So if you are interested, please keep an eye open for that E-Hop IPA. There's going to be a version brewed at Harpoon and a version brewed at Deschutes. And then we were off to GABF.
What does that stand for?
Great American Beer Festival. Actually, no, we had a brief stop in between to meet up with Christian DeBenedetti, who wrote a brand new beer book. So we're going to have more about him. We'll have him as a guest, too, in a few weeks when his book is officially out. Great American Beer Festival. All right, so we also got into the Paired Pavilion, which is an absolutely amazing beer and food pairing pavilion that the GABF has on Thursday and Friday night. And if you are interested in beer and food, I would highly recommend that. They had more space at that this year. And they basically pair up breweries and chefs from all over the country, renowned chefs. Amazing pairings, amazing food, tons of oysters. So definitely hit that. We're going to have actually Adam.
Yeah, curated by Adam Julia, who works also with Savor, with the Brewers Association, to do a lot of these. And actually at thebrewersassociation.com, they even have a food pairing guide, which is really great. Can't recommend that enough.
We went to three sessions at the Great American Beer Festival. We were there Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday afternoon session. I checked into every single beer on Untappd. I am My Life on Craft on Untappd, if you would like to friend me. So I actually checked into almost all of my beers. I didn't check into the beers at Paired, and there was a couple beers that I didn't love. I would say only two, though. But I checked into 106 beers at GABF. So I definitely tasted at least 106 beers. I did hydrate in between. I drank almost every single 1 ounce beer rinse in between. I think that really helped out, helped me stay hydrated and healthy.
Somewhat healthy, yes.
I was pretty good. Anyway, so Thursday was great. It was, I can't say enough about GABF. First of all, the additional floor space was incredible. It did not feel really crowded at any of those sessions. Now, granted, there were very long lines at some of the more popular breweries, like the Weed Brewery. I don't remember the name of that one. I have to go back to that one. But some of the bigger breweries, like obviously Three Floyds. There was a huge line for Three Floyds, for Allagash, those kind of breweries.
Well, and I think you've just piqued people's interest. What do you mean by Weed Brewery?
So there is a brewery in Denver, and I have the name somewhere. I didn't actually wait in line to taste the beer. But they're using hemp extract, so it's actually not weed. But that was the longest line that I saw, and I was curious as to why there was such a long line, and that seemed to be it. Anyway, so Friday morning we got up, and we went to this Sam Adams Media Brunch. And Sam Adams, that's a time where they announce any of their new projects, as well as announce the winners of the Long Shot competition.
By the way, it's called Dads and Dudes Brews.
Yeah. Okay, so Sam Adams actually has something pretty exciting coming out. They are introducing a line of nitro beers. We haven't talked about this, but we're going to have a whole show devoted to nitrogen, or to nitro pour. I'm obsessed. Actually, I'm not obsessed with nitro beers. I'm obsessed with other nitro beverages. Coffee, tea, other things served by nitro. So we have a show on nitro. I actually want to put in a nitro tap. So we're going to have... Anyway, we're going to cover that in a future show, but I'm definitely excited about these Sam Adams beers. They're coming out with a nitro white ale, a coffee stout, and an IPA. And we tasted the white ale there. I don't think these are out yet. They're going to be out on draft, and then they're actually going to have nitro cans with a widget.
All three of these will be in cans and widget starting in 2016.
Yep, and on draft as well. So we actually tasted the white ale, and I got to say it was super smooth. I do have a lot of... I don't have a particular love for nitro beers, but I do think they have a special place. And they really work. They're super smooth, and they do actually emphasize different aromas and flavors than straight up CO2.
Yes, and Jim says, you know, you have to brew to them, brew with the idea of how you're going to be carbonating it to manipulate it to the best it can be. And I think that for that white IPA, it did very well.
Yeah, I agree. That was like the best. That was perfect brunch beer. Let's just put it that way. Then they also announced the winners of the Long Shot competition. So the Long Shot competition is an annual homebrew competition that Sam Adams has. And they have homebrewers from all over the country can enter. And they also have an a company-wide homebrew competition as well. So they have the company winner and then two of the homebrew winners. So the three winners are Tim Thompson with his Raspberry Berliner Weiss, Kevin Nancer with his Belgian Golden Strong Ale, and then Colin Foy with his Flanders Red Ale. And those will all be brewed by Sam Adams early next year and available in a special Long Shot pack. And we got to taste all of those as well. And they were all really good. So that's going to be an exciting pack to pick up when it's out.
It is. And I'm really excited to talk to them about how they're making it on a big scale for Berliner and the Flanders Red.
Absolutely. I mean, two sours of the three. Yeah, that's a pretty big chunk. You know, those are tricky brews.
Yep.
All right, so then after that, we headed to judge the hardest competition I've ever judged since I've been judging. So some of you know I'm a national beer judge, so I've judged a lot of homebrew competition, but then Chris and I have also judged a variety of other competitions, from pro beer competitions to homebrew competitions that aren't BJCP. So the Alpha King competition is basically competition beers around the country are sent in, and it's put on by YCH Hops.
We spoke to it a little bit last week. Yakima Chief Hop Union. And the requirement is that everything has to be 60 IBU or above. And the criterion for winning is best use of hops. Not necessarily the most slap you in the face hop bomb.
Yep.
But all of them are pretty much giant and assertive hop forward beers without a doubt.
And the tricky thing is that I think, first of all, one thing that I've noticed before is that I find that there's more difference in people's palates when
it comes to
smelling
hops
and tasting hops than other. Also, you know, we all have differences. Like, for instance, Kuzme picks up diacetyl on a much, he has a much lower threshold for diacetyl. You're more sensitive to diacetyl Absolutely. Than I am. I would say I'm a medium diacetyl.
And Mary smells mildew on my shirts far more than I do.
Yes, I pick up mildew way more than Chris does. So everybody's, you know, palates and sensitivities are different. It's just the science of smell and our physiology of aroma and flavor. But I think that's particularly true with hops. So it was kind of interesting because we all got different perceptions out of the hops. The other thing is, man, I mean, brewers can really use hops. We got down to 7, and listen, honestly, I think they all should have been given an award. They all were excellent use of hops. I mean, and you know, hops is another thing that fades right away. The fresher the beer, the better. It will, you know, hoppy beers will change pretty drastically over a short period of time. Anyway, so that was a ton of fun. It was absolutely a privilege to be able to taste that many really well done pale ales, IPAs, dark IPAs, you name it, we tasted them. As far as hoppy beers. Oh, and congratulations to the winner of that. It was
Uber
Brew. It is Mark Hastings of Uber Brew in Billings, Montana, with his Alpha Force Double Tap Tactical IPA. All right, so rolling around to Saturday. We're in the final stretch here. Oh, no, Friday night. Oh, we headed to my brother's bar, which is a little bit off the beaten path. It was actually a really short Uber ride away. But we had old school bar. We had killer burgers, kind of recovered a little bit from the GABF.
How old is my brother's bar?
Well, it's the longest continuous running bar, right, in Denver. It's been through several owners.
But it's been continuously running. It's the longest continuously running bar.
Yes.
I don't know when it started.
I know. I have to look it up again.
But it's cool. It's vibe. It's a good vibe.
Yeah, definitely a good hang. And they, yeah, definitely. Oh, and then we actually, we're about to leave and go to sleep, and my friend Chris O'Leary from Brew York, who you guys heard a few weeks ago, sent a message that he and his buddies were over at Denver Beer Company, which is only a few blocks away. So we walked up there, and I will say that we tasted a couple of beers, but I had the Brew Ha Ha, which is a very cool collaboration they did with the Denver Public Library. Now, I'm a rabid public library user. I have an NYPL card, and I use it all the time, mostly online. But that's where I get most of my reading and auditory material. And I just think I was super impressed, and man, if
More people did collaborations with libraries.
Yes,
think
libraries.
Of all the educated people we have.
Yes, I just think that's the coolest thing. And it was a really good beer as well. Anyway, so Saturday morning was more GABF.
Education through osmosis, right?
Yeah. Anyway, Saturday morning was more Great American Beer Festival. They announced the winners, so I actually went outside. So my technique kind of at GABF every year is to drink as weird as I can. So I will say, I tasted a lot of sours. A lot of kettle sours. There were way more kettle sours there. And there's kind of a backlash against kettle sours right now because a lot of people, you know, who like the traditional mixed culture, you know, Cantillon kind of sours, aged sours. Kettle sour is a very different animal, but I will say that I respect and love it just as much. And generally, they do tend to be more sessionable. They are more of single note beverages, although I think different techniques can add, and different ingredients can add complexity. But I really love kettle sours. I just think they're incredibly refreshing, very tasty, and really a nice way for a brewery to add, a nice, relatively safe way for a brewery to add something tart or sour to their lineup in a very quick manner. It doesn't take years. It can take, you know, weeks to get a kettle sour. Anyway, I was impressed with the quality of beer overall at the Great American Beer Festival. Not only in kettle sours, I tasted a lot of fruit and vegetable beers, which can sometimes range in quality, I think more so. And wow, super impressed. And then at the Saturday session, the winners had been announced. So I went around and actually tried as many of the winning beers as I could. So we tasted Chuckanuts.
That was one of my favorite beers.
Some of their lagers. Yeah, man.
Chuckanut Kolsch was just so beautiful, so gorgeous, so clean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, awesome.
So, man, it's just such a privilege to have so many delicious beers. So after GABF, we had a red eye that night. So we actually headed up to Stem Cider, which is a local cidery there in Denver. And that was super cool to, you know, break from the beer mold. And I have as much respect for cider as I do for beer. And they're making some good ones. They also had some, I think they had guest ciders as well. I have to look back at what I tapped into. Anyway, we had a flight there. We headed from there. We went to Ratio Brewing Company, which was also fun. We met up with some friends of ours up there. And then we ended up at our mutual friend. So our mutual friend, we had tasted one of their beers at the Beers Made by Walking, but we hadn't actually tasted anything else. And they actually had, they had a winner, right? They won, I think, at GABF, and they had several that they had entered into GABF. So we tasted some beers there. That is also a really cool, just the vibe to that place is awesome, and they're making good beers. So that's another really cool place. The cool thing I think about Denver is that, you know, we didn't really go, there's so many breweries, and all of the ones that we went to were pretty much within walking distance of downtown and within walking distance of each other. So that's a really cool thing, I think. And Denver has a lot of Uber, so you definitely do not need to drive. So yeah, that's it. What else do I have to say? Ooh, I was in Orlando last week. That's why I missed last week's show. So I was there for a 5-day, I have a day job, 5-day sales meeting for my day job. And I will say that I was staying at the Hyatt on International Drive, and I was very delighted that they actually had local craft beer at their bar. So I tasted several local craft beers. Also went to Harry Potter. I got to drink a Fuller's at the Leaky Cauldron. That was a highlight, I have to say. Yep. No, it's just, I think that's the more, you know, we even went to this crazy kind of club place, and I was super shocked. They were actually, I actually was able to order a Sweetwater.
So craft beer is infiltrating.
Yes, it's
Disney
super exciting. Disney World, not only Disney World, but just every, we went, the place that we went, Blue Martini was kind of this, it was like a martini-driven club atmosphere. You know, the fact that they had Sweetwater on draft, clean tap lines, like, it was delicious. It's just very cool to be able to travel almost anywhere and get good craft beer.
So what's the over-under year for when the craft beer bubble's going to burst?
I don't believe in a bubble. I think we're going to be able to support this.
Here. Next week, we have David Asher from The Art of Cheesemaking. Where's that next week?
Natural Cheesemaking, yes. October 12th.
October 12th. Excited to have that.
Yep.
Say goodbye, Mary.
Foment about it.
You're supposed to say goodbye, Mary. Say it. Say goodbye, Mary.
Goodbye, Mary.
See? Knew it'd work. All right. Talk to y'all next week. Foment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Clutch to your burden, her waters abate.